Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he always does, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire.
Ah, I see you are ready to talk about black gold.
Yes, Texas tea. The technology of oil drilling. So first you get your shotgun, and then you go hunting for some food. And up from the ground comes a bubbling crude.
You know, there are more efficient ways to drill for oil than...
I don't know. That's pretty efficient. You just have to be insanely lucky. No, that is actually not the way one normally looks for oil or drills for oil. And the process does involve quite a bit of technology. Some of it is fairly simple tech when you look at it from, you know, as far as a sophistication standpoint. Without it, we wouldn't be able to get to oil the way we do. Our society would be completely different.
Yes.
We certainly wouldn't be podcasting right now.
No.
Too much of our technology is based off of oil or is powered by stuff that gets its power ultimately through oil.
Yes.
So,
And of course, it's been in the news a lot lately. And
yeah.
As we've been reading through some of the articles on HowStuffWorks.com, which I encourage you to do so, especially since Jonathan put all that time into updating some of those.
Yeah.
We were looking at the technology and thinking, you know, this is kind of interesting as a topic that we haven't talked about. I mean, it's kind of off our normal beaten path, but of it's pretty amazing how they can find oil and then, you know, the fact that they can even go down as far as they did for the Deepwater Horizon.
Right.
Well,
that was pretty phenomenal.
Create the well itself, even though there were problems. We could talk about some of the equipment that they would use.
Yeah, so, and we can talk about why it was not just the fact that, you know, the blowout was a huge problem with the Deepwater Horizon, but also why it's a problem that Like, why couldn't they fix that as opposed to being able to fix it on in other situations?
Sure.
We'll get into that.
And, sure.
Once we get under pressure. So starting off, let's talk about how you would find oil before you even start drilling.
Right.
Now, in the olden days, way back when people were first starting to drill for oil, you pretty much had to look around and really observe the geographic features of the region you were in.
Mm-hmm.
And really you needed the help of a geologist, someone who was learned in the ways of things like rock formations, the kinds of rocks that were in the region, because you needed to look for specific sort of rocks and soil that would be indicative that there at least is the potential for oil to be present.
Right. Well, you still need geologists.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely a very important part of finding oil. It's just that now they have more tools at their disposal than just their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true, because they're using they basically look for changes in the Earth's gravitational field.
Yeah.
That can indicate that there's oil nearby.
That's one of the methods. Yeah, really what they're trying to do is they're looking for oil flows. Now, when I say looking, obviously, they can't see the oil because it's underground or underwater.
Well, at least not in most cases.
Yeah. If you can see the oil, like, you really don't need your geologist there.
Yeah. I mean, there are things like, you know, oil sands when it's
true.
A lot
that
more obvious that there is oil present. But in those cases, you can't, you know, just slurp it up. There's a lot of work to be done. And I didn't prepare for that particular topic. But yeah, and in those cases, you can actually see that there is petroleum. And I would imagine, just a guess, you could probably smell it too.
Right. Actually, they geologists might use sniffers.
Really?
Which are electronic sensors that can detect the presence of oil. So they could smell for it. They could use the gravitational sensors that Paulette was talking about. They could also use magnetic sensors to detect mm-hmm. changes in the Earth's magnetic field, which would be the result of oil flowing sometimes several thousand feet below the surface of the Earth.
Yeah.
And then one of the most common ways is they create vibrations in the Earth and then listen for the it's kind of like an echo. You're listening for the reflection of the vibration you've sent into the Earth to detect what kind of rock is beneath you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're essentially thumping the Earth and listening to hear what kind of – it's like when you pick up a melon and you thump it to see if it's ripe to eat, except in this case you're thumping the earth to see if there's any oil down there. And when I say thumping, sometimes literally they are thumping the earth, except they're doing it with a massive truck.
Yes, a thumper truck.
A thumper truck, yes.
I think I had one of those drive down my street the other day.
Yeah, I actually call them Flower. And they tell me that he can call me Flower if he wants to.
Oh.
It's a thumper truck.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's a skunk.
That's true.
Thumper
right.
was a rabbit.
That's true. Well, I'll screw up my own joke. You know what? That's okay.
Well, somebody will write in.
Listen, I'm a Bambi enthusiast, and let me tell you. So anyway.
Oh, dear.
The thumper. Nice. The thumper truck has these big heavy plates that they will raise and lower against the ground. They, mm-hmm. they hit the ground really hard. And then you have microphones, very sensitive microphones, set up around the area, around the region to detect the vibrations. And based upon the quality of those vibrations, you can tell whether or not there's oil flowing underneath the surface. There's also they could also use explosives to do the same thing.
Well,
so you
yeah.
could dig a hole and put some explosives in, or in the case of if you're trying to search for oil in the water, you may throw explosives over the side of the boat. Not recommended. And there are other ways to get the same effect.
Well, there's the compressed air gun.
Yes, which is much safer.
Mm-hmm.
You can use a compressed air gun. You fire compressed air at the ground, and that creates the vibration you need to, you know, then you listen to hear if there's the correct frequency that would indicate that there's oil beneath the ground.
Yeah, and actually, I sort of misspoke when I said that we really haven't talked about this kind of thing before, because oil has made a cameo appearance in another recent podcast, Autotune, because some of
right.
the audio technology that they use
That's what the founder of AutoTune originally was a geologist who worked on this kind of technology.
Yep, and that technology evolved and got used for the sound correcting gizmo that we all know and a lot of people don't love.
Right. So if you've listened to AutoTune, the news' version of Double Rainbow, mm-hmm. which is phenomenal, by the way, you too are experiencing the joy of the technology that can help you find oil.
Okay.
In a really twisted way. So,
but say they find oil.
All right. They found oil. Now comes the point where they have to start drilling down so they can get to the oil.
Okay.
And drilling is a very involved process. The first thing they have to do, they have to, assuming that it's land-based, they've mm-hmm. got to clear the land, mm-hmm. and they have to level it off so that they can build an oil rig to start drilling. They have to have water in the drilling process. Actually, water is very important. They use water to mix with dirt to create mud.
Yes.
They use the mud to help pump, or really to push the rock that gets broken up as the drill is drilling down into the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So they essentially are pumping mud down into the hole to help clear the rock out of the way as the drill drills down.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to have a water supply. So either you need water nearby, or if there's not any water, you need to drill a water well.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have water to for this process. The water-based rigs don't have this problem.
Now, there's usually quite a lot of water in the offshore drilling process. But on land, the crew does need to dig a reserve pit, which they use to get rid of the rock cuttings and some of the mud. They line it with plastic, you know, in an attempt to protect the environment.
Right. You don't want anything leaching into the water supply of the local area. And also, if it's a certain area, certain protected areas, they aren't even allowed to do the reserve pit. They have to actually truck all the rock that they dig up off-site.
Right.
But in most cases, they'll dig this reserve pit, and that's where they're putting all the waste rock, essentially.
Mm-hmm. They also need to build a cellar.
Yeah.
Apparently to store the wine.
That's exactly why they need to do that.
I'm kidding.
Providing the foundation of where the rig's going to go.
Right.
So once they've got the preparations out of the way, they start to put together the rig. They ship in all the stuff and they start mm-hmm. assembling it. The rig's power supply is all, well, diesel engines provide the power.
Mm-hmm.
They provide power to electrical generators, which in turn provide electrical power to the mechanical systems on the rig. The rig itself, most people are familiar with the really tall tower that you can see on oil rigs, derrick.
Right.
You might wonder why those towers are there. I mean, most of the time we see like the old movies where we'll see the oil shooting out the top of the derrick, and you think, well, what the heck is the purpose of that thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually there so that the oil workers can assemble the pipe that is needed to continue to drive the drill bit down further and further into the hole. Because, you know, as you make progress, the drill bit goes further down, you have to extend that pipe
mm-hmm.
so the drill bit can keep going down. Well, the tower is there so that you can put another length of pipe on the end. And these lengths of pipe are about 30 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
This is true both for the land-based and the water-based oil drilling.
Right.
Because they'll have to – and for the water-based one, actually, the pipe has to be even longer because first you have to get – your drill bit all the way down to the ground. So mm-hmm. you have to get it through all the water first, and then you have to keep extending it. So the drill, of course, is based off rotation. There's a big turntable that is turned by the generators, the electric motors that are powered by the generators, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And that turns the drill string
mm-hmm.
And the drill bit, which is at the very bottom of it. There's a collar above the drill bit.
Mm-hmm.
The collar is a thicker pipe that fits around the drill string, and its purpose is to protect the drill bit. It's also to provide some pressure to push downwards so that the drill bit is constantly digging down, not just spinning mm-hmm. without anything happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And they line the well that they're drilling with a big pipe.
Right.
To keep it from collapsing in on itself. Because it wouldn't do you any good to drill a hole if 200 feet down the hole starts to collapse in on itself.
That's right.
So it's a really involved process, really. Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of manual labor to get that going. And once the drill bit is dragging up the or knocking out rock, that's when they start pumping the mud down to bring the bits of rock up, and they collect those off and they put it in the pit.
Right. That is another function of the casing, liner that goes around, is that it does help the drilling mud to circulate.
Right.
While they are drilling and get the chips out and everything else that needs to come out, because the circulation system is responsible for getting the mud in, and it's it helps move things in and out. It's very important that they've got it. It's made up of a number of different pieces. Of course, it's got a pump in it and hoses. There is a specific line to get the mud out of the hole.
Right.
There's a shaker that gets the rock cuttings out of the mud so that they can recycle it, because they do that. They do that actually in the, get this, this is the technical term, mud pit.
Yes, the mud pit. they also occasionally have to mix new mud. Mm-hmm. Eventually they have to add more mud, especially once the hole's getting deeper and deeper. As they're digging down, the goal here is to get to the point where you are just hitting the pocket of oil that's underneath the surface.
Right.
You're not the again, that image of the oil shooting up through the derrick, that's what we call a blowback, and that's not a good thing necessarily. It's actually a very dangerous thing.
Yes. Blowback or blowout?
Blowout. Sorry. A blowout. And yeah, there's, you don't want those. That's bad.
No.
The reason for those blowouts, by the way, is because that oil is also mixed with natural gas, and both the oil and the gas are under immense pressure,
mm-hmm.
because you've got all these layers of rock on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you drill a hole into the pocket that has all the gas and oil in it, then you've got a release from that pressure.
Right.
And the blowout can be very dangerous. In fact, that's what happened at Deepwater Horizons, where there was a blowout which ended up causing extensive damage. It ended up eventually sinking that rig, and it very tragically killed 11 of the workers on board that rig.
Yes.
The explosion did. And so you don't want those blowouts. Even though they're big dramatic moments in movies, you don't want to see that happen.
Yeah, and in the movies they make it look like it's a lot of fun. They strike oil and it comes gushing out the top of the derrick, and everybody, throws their hat in the air and whoops
and
hollers.
And does a little prospector dance.
Yeah.
That's not really the case.
That and it's, extremely toxic. It's not the kind of stuff that you want on your skin.
No. So
and then the environment.
So they have blowout preventers,
mm-hmm.
as they're digging. A blowout preventer is a pretty simple design. It's really just a clamp.
Mm-hmm.
It's powered by a very massive hydraulic system. That is extremely powerful. And it's at the very top of the well. It's
mm-hmm.
the well cap, where it connects to the drilling equipment.
And that may seem like a misnomer, because if you've been watching the coverage of the Deepwater Horizon thing, you might say, no, the blowout preventer is that thing sitting on the floor of the sea. That is at the top of the well, because the well goes down into the ground from
right.
there. So,
right.
yes, it is at the top of the well.
Yeah. If it were on land, it would be right there at the surface of the ground, just,
mm-hmm.
Right at surface level, rather, as opposed to underneath the water. But, I mean, yeah, that's the top of the well. So if in the case of a blowout, what you normally would have happen, either you would have a sensor that would indicate that something bad is happening and it would automatically activate the blowout preventer,
mm-hmm.
or you would use a manual system, like you would actually pull a lever or press a button to activate it,
mm-hmm.
and the clamp closes in on the casing and seals it off.
Yeah. It's got a hydraulic ram that just, slams shut.
Yeah.
And basically is supposed to cut off that flow. Unfortunately, in the case of the Deepwater Horizon, the blowout preventer malfunctioned.
Right.
And just never...
It never activated.
No.
So there was no way to stop the gas and oil from essentially erupting from this well. So... Normally, with the drilling process, again, you wouldn't drill to that point. You would drill to the point where you were detecting oil, that it was clear that oil was present. but you wouldn't keep going until it was just shooting out of the top of the derrick.
No.
You would replace the rig with an oil production system. So you would actually deconstruct the rig and put in a new system there to tap and collect the oil in a very controlled manner, because that's going to be the least dangerous way of collecting the oil.
Right. You don't want to puncture the ground, the part, the strata of rock.
Right.
Stratum of rock that is holding the oil in until you're ready to collect it, because otherwise you're going to lose a lot of it or there will be a blowout. So you want to have everything in place and ready to go until you finally puncture that rock area, and then you can oil will come up through the well.
And the way they do that is once they've reached the well depth that they need to get to, they actually puncture holes in the well casing at the very base of it, and they seal it off first, and then what they do is when they deconstruct the rig and they move it out of the way, they bring in a pump.
Right.
And the pumps are those things that you see if you ever watch a movie set in like Texas or whatever, and you see those big metal things that are swiveling up and down. It looks like giant seesaw type things.
Yeah.
Those are the pumps.
Right.
And what the pumps do is they have a rod that goes down into the well creates suction as it moves up and down. And that's what allows them to draw oil out of the well in a controlled manner. It's occasionally the oil itself is too heavy to pull up on its own. So what they'll do is they'll drill a second hole down and they'll pump steam into that oil pocket, essentially, so that they can pull the oil up out of the hole.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, we talked a little bit about Deepwater Horizon already. I'm sorry. Were you going to add something else?
Well, I was going to add the device. I didn't remember you saying that the device that they used to puncture the well and put it into production is the perforating gun.
Yes.
And they lower that down there. It's got a little explosive charge, and basically they perforate the casing and put a tube in there, and then use a packer to form a seal around the outside of the tubing, and then theoretically the well is complete.
Right. The tubing is the only way in and out of that well at that point. So, yeah.
And then they have a Christmas tree.
Yeah, they do. That's a structure with lots of valves on it. It's actually called a Christmas tree. Paulette was not being.
No, I wasn't being.
He wasn't
goofy.
Well, he was a little goofy, but not that goofy. Yeah, it's actually a device with lots of valves at the top. It's cemented in, and it's part of it. But anyway, that's part of the control system to allow for the controlled extraction of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Christmas tree. So it's Christmas all year round on the oil rig.
In some ways.
I suppose so. So, well, yeah, going back to the Deepwater Horizon issue. So these are, if you're out in deep water, there are really only two major ways that you can drill for oil. One is to use a drill ship, which is pretty much what it sounds like. It's a big boat that happens to have a hole in the center of it.
Somebody is going to write in.
It's
a big ship.
Okay, here's the definition of ship versus boat. There is no clear delineation. You could say that a boat is small enough to fit on a ship, and a ship is big enough to hold a boat. But that is not – that's like, what's a mountain versus a hill? Well, a hill's smaller than a mountain. That is not a good enough definition.
All squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares.
So this boat has a hole in it. And right in the center.
Right, Jonathan.
And the drill extends down through the hole, and that's where they pump the water and mud or whatever down into – it's just like the land-based one, except you're on a boat. On a ship.
Yes.
Out at sea.
It's a ship.
And but otherwise you would have an oil rig on the top with a derrick and everything to extend the pipe down to the seafloor bed and then further down as you drill down into the well. The other option is a semi-submersible MODU, which is a mobile offshore drilling unit.
Right.
That's what Deepwater Horizon was. It was a semi-submersible. And those float on these big pontoons. They float out. They actually have a power system where you can pilot them out to the proper spot in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And then you usually use anchors, several anchors, to keep you in one specific spot on the ocean. And you use a very sophisticated – this is actually where sophisticated technology comes into play. There's a sophisticated computer system that measures the tension on each line down mm-hmm. to each anchor and then maintains the proper tension to keep the semi-submersible in place.
You know what that's called, right?
What's that?
Anchor management.
I'm going to need some of that in a second. Oh, my gosh. I think I just had an aneurysm. So anyway, yeah, there might be up to a dozen anchors to keep these things in place.
Right.
And then, again, you have a derrick on top of this this semi-submersible vehicle, and you drill down. Now, if you're in shallower water, you have a couple of other options. There's a kind of a modu called a jack-up.
Yes.
Jack-up, what you do is it's, again, a semi-submersible kind of barge.
You is it float semi-submersible or is it – it floats on top, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it can have pontoons as well, but most of them are on barges. So, yeah, most of them do just float on the surface. Mm-hmm. Well, you would float it out to the right location. And, again, this is where you're in shallow-ish water, like up to around 525 feet, which is still – you know, it's pretty deep, but shallow when you compare to deep water drilling. When you get to where you want to go, you actually – it can extend legs down from the barge to the sea floor. Mm-hmm. So you create a tripod, essentially, a stand. I think there's only three legs. Sometimes I guess there could be four. But you once you hit the sea floor, you then continue extending the legs, which raises the barge out of the water. Mm-hmm. And you keep doing that till you get to the proper height. And, of course, you may have to extend one leg more than the other two because it's at a slightly different height on the sea floor. But you do this so that the reason why you go above the waves is so that the motion of the ocean doesn't interfere with your drilling activities.
Now I'm going to be singing Rock Lobster all day long. Thanks.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of ruins in Mesopotamia. And then the other method is just a submersible mm-hmm. mobile offshore drilling unit. And these are not used that often, but it's a barge that actually sinks, kind of. It goes down to the sea floor. And then the steel posts on the barge extend up, and then you build your drilling platform on the posts. Mm-hmm. So you've got a barge sitting at the bottom of the ocean. And when I say bottom of the ocean, I'm talking like 30 to 35 feet, so it's not that deep,
right?
Comparatively speaking. And then you've got the posts on the barge's deck, and you build the rig on top of the posts. So again, the rig is suspended above the waterline. Mm-hmm. Now, there are many reasons why the Deepwater Horizon issue – this is the oil spill in the Gulf, in case you weren't aware that that was what the name of the
– right.
actual semi-submersible was.
Right.
There are many reasons why this problem is very difficult to handle, and chief among them is just that it is at an incredible depth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that we're talking that the wellhead itself is so far below the surface of the ocean that it's very difficult to get there.
Right.
We don't really understand that much about the ocean at this depth because we have very limited means of getting down there and exploring. The pressure of the water at that point is pretty intense. Mm-hmm. So there are very few vehicles that we have that can safely navigate that depth.
It's not like divers can just hop in and, you know, go down and work with it by hand.
Yeah,
just
getting a look at it was pretty complicated, especially considering that, you know, the explosion and fire were that you had to get that under control first. So really the depth is the major point. Another problem is just that it is really hard to estimate exactly how bad the problem is. Mm-hmm. The earliest accounts had it just being a few thousand barrels of oil a day, which when I say just a few thousand, a barrel of oil is 42 gallons of oil. That's
right.
A lot of oil. But the worst case scenario documents suggested that it could be as bad as 100,000 barrels of oil a day. So clearly this could be an enormous issue. And as we're recording this podcast, there are high hopes that the replacement wellhead is going to cap it to the point where we can actually address the issue more thoroughly. We'll have to wait and see if it works. But we're hoping, because the other predictions for this said that the earliest we would be able to really address the problem would be August, and it's July of 2010 as we record this. So considering that the initial event happened back in April, that's bad news. That's a lot of oil.
Well, they are BP is still working on drilling relief wells as we speak, and although you might believe that they are there to relieve pressure, they're actually not, from what I understand from listening to an account on NPR. Basically, what they're going to do is try to intercept the well itself, the original well, and shut it down from inside.
Yeah.
So that's the point. And the thing is, at this depth, as you were saying earlier, Jonathan, it's very complicated. They want to make sure that they're moving slowly because they want to make sure that they don't do additional damage and hurt their chances of getting it taken care of sooner, which I think was a source of frustration for a lot of people because they wanted it done and taken care of sooner rather than later. But they said, look, we've got to take the time. So it's very challenging to drill these wells and make them work properly. And when accidents happen like this, mistakes happen, the thing is, fixing them is not a simple task either and relies on quite a bit of technology to make it work.
Yep.
So I think we both found it, you know, kind of fascinating, the technology that they use to make it work at all.
Yeah, it's a fascinating and sobering subject. So
definitely.
At any rate, the idea behind it is still pretty simple. Drilling a hole down till you get what you need. But the things that you need to make that work in a safe and controlled way are pretty impressive.
Yeah, in practice.
Yeah, turns out more complicated than you would originally imagine. Well, that was a good discussion about oil drilling, and not too terribly depressing. So good on us.
Well, we were just trying to take it from the middle ground, technical aspect. This is how you do it. You know.
Now that we've told you how to do it, here's the disclaimer. No one's going to go out there
and build
an oil rig. I mean, who could? We're going to get an email. Someone's going to be, I struck gold.
Hey, now
black gold, Texas tea.
We could talk about that in the future too. The, you know, minerals and getting that out. I don't know.
That sounds like stuff from the science lab to me. Sounds sciencey.
Sciencey.
It's like that.
There's like
physics,
numbers and stuff.
Physics and geology. They can take that. All right, guys. We are going to wrap this up. But if you have any questions or topic suggestions you would like us to tackle in the future, you can write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.